Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to the Syrup Arcade Cast, Mobile Syrup's gaming focused podcast. I'm Dean, and across the internet from me is Brad Chankar, the gaming whiz. How are you doing, Brad?
Good. Long, busy last couple weeks, but excited to chill out and talk some game awards.
Yeah, you had a particularly busy set of weeks, and I'm really excited to talk about it more. But before we do that, let's introduce our other guest. Guests, plural. We also have the not Chris Brown, Chris Brown, on this podcast. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm great. I'm excited for this week. This is a big episode.
Yes, it is. And last but not least, we also have Steve. How are you doing, Steve?
Hello. I'm doing really well, guys. It's been quite some time since I've last been on the show, but I can't be more excited to be here talking about the Game Awards with y'all.
I should also say your last name, Steve, but then I realize I don't know how to pronounce it. How do you... Vigvari?
You nailed it.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah. Cool. Don't second-guess yourself next time. Just dive right in.
Dive on in. All right, cool. Steve, just before we go on further, I love your shirt. For those who are listening, he's wearing a YTV shirt, which ages him. Our main topic for this week is the Game Awards, and we'll also discuss our fantasy draft. And just to let everyone know, like a quick spoiler alert, I didn't win. But before we do that, let's dive into some of the recent news from this past week. We'll go straight into the Canadian winners of the Game Awards.
Cool, yeah, I'll take over from there. We only had a couple, but they were pretty noteworthy. Sabotage and Quebec City, they won Best Indie for Sea of Stars, a Chrono Trigger-inspired RPG. I've written a lot about that game. I had like a 5-part interview series with the creative director, so you can go check that out. Montreal's Awaseb, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, they won Games for Impact for Chia. A new Caledonia-inspired action-adventure game. They weren't there, so PlayStation, Shuhei Yoshida accepted on their behalf. And then I guess it's also just worth noting that Larian, who ultimately won for Baldur's Gate 3, they do have a studio in Quebec that helped out with that game. So they won a bunch of awards, including Game of the Year, so shout-out to them as well.
Oh, man, I did not know Larian had a studio in Quebec. I was actually really cheering for... I haven't played this game, but Venba... and it was really cool. They did a little Canadian call out to the developer and like showed some clips of him in Toronto and stuff. I thought that was really nice. Unfortunately, they didn't win, but very nice either way. Also, we have a new contest on Mobile Syrup. One lucky person has the chance to win an Xbox Deluxe Edition Baldur's Gate 3 game. Anyone can enter, of course, if you're as long as you're outside of Quebec. Anyone in Canada can enter, as long as you're outside of Quebec. Definitely give it a shot. This game has been out for a while, but it's only recently been out on Xbox. So, you know, there's a chance. And if you yourself have already played it, it might be a little nice holiday gift. And I'm going to do a quick shout out to Antenna. You can read everything we talk about on the podcast and all our news and stuff like that on Antenna, our recently refreshed newsletter for all the Canadian news you care about, delivered right to your inbox. And we also have an on-site version of the newsletter as well. So heading into the main topic, we have a lot to talk about. So let's just, you know, cut some of the other stuff out and just go dive right into the meat. The Game Awards, and this year, Brad Chankar and Steve, Figari, we're both there. How was it?
You can go first, Steve. It was your first time?
Yeah. No, it was my first time, and I thought it was good. As a participant, as like a member in the audience, I think it was really cool to kind of sit there, take in all the spectacle. I've been, you know, a fan of Jeff Keighley and his productions and everything he's done for the industry for quite some time now. So to kind of see a peek behind the curtain in some ways for, you know, what goes on behind the scenes is really cool stuff. I mean, I think everyone who's kind of kept up with the Game Awards this year knows that a lot of people have some valid criticisms about the production and like the pacing and how much, you know, time is dedicated to the developers versus the reveals and announcements and the ads and stuff like that. So it's kind of a mixed bag. From like an objective point of view, the production is always just really great, but from just my subjective point of view, someone who keeps up with the industry and everything, I do feel like there was a little bit of work that still needs to go into the Game Awards next year to kind of ensure that anyone that's, you know, winning an award or kind of having a platform to speak at the award show kind of has their due and isn't just, you know, taken off the stage after 30 seconds. And that's, yeah, it's kind of disappointing when, you know, you have someone as good as Larry and win, you know, some really notable awards like Game of the Year. And then they start talking about something heartfelt, you know, talking about a member of their team who passed away. And then all of a sudden, you know, they get the music playing off. It's like, oh, there goes the rough, kind of like the production side of it that kind of gets in the way. But overall, it was fun. I mean, Brad and I got to hang out a whole bunch, so that was really nice. But yeah, as a whole, it was a solid experience, and I would definitely go again.
Yeah, I went last year, so this was my second time going. I echo a lot of what Steve says. The whole experience surrounding the show, I would say, is the highlight. I mentioned before, sort of after all of these LA-based events, particularly the Game Awards, everyone sort of goes to the JW Marriott Hotel, which is right across the street from the theater, the Peacock Theater, as it's now stupidly called. And so you can kind of see a who's who of the industry there, which is really cool. Like, one of our colleagues from CGM, Dana, got to meet Sam Lake without us, so kind of hate her for that. But that's the sort of thing that you can just kind of in the lobby, you can just run into people, meet them. We met, like, the creative director of Blade from Arcane, which is really cool. Dinga Bakaba, he did Deathloop as well. Steve got a photo with him, which is really cool. We ran into Todd Howard again, just having a little dinner with some people there. So Team Canada got a photo with him. So that sort of thing is really cool to just kind of meet them in like a sort of, it's a very packed environment. Like, they could definitely handle that a bit better, I feel, like with the bar and everything. But in terms of just being around, getting to mingle with people, and even before the show, like I got to, the day that I flew in, I got to go to a Warframe mixer, which is cool because they're the London, Ontario-based team behind Digital Extremes that make that game. And they announced right off as I got off the plane, it's like, oh, we have two special guests. And one of them is Ben Starr from Final Fantasy 16, and the other one's Neil Newbon from Baldur's Gate 3. And they're both in our game now. And I'm like, oh, cool. So you just get, that was my third time, my second of three times meeting Ben Starr that week, which was hilarious. Hung out with him for a while. He had a pink fanny pack on, which was hilarious. Talked to Neil Newbon for a while. Super nice guys. Some of our colleagues, Dana's colleagues who got COVID and couldn't make it, they, completely unprompted, took her phone and recorded lovely messages for them back home, which is super nice because they're big Final Fantasy and Baldur's Gate fans. So really nice guys, and they're really good friends, so they were cheering each other on to win Game of the Game, Best Performance. So that sort of stuff I love. Like Steve said, all of the stuff surrounding the awards themselves is kind of unsavory this year. I mean, it's always it's a delicate balance. You know, the ads are and the celebrities and everything are sort of a necessary evil. We kind of learned to accept those over the years, but the imbalance this year was obscene. It felt like a really big overcorrection from... Yeah, last year, Chris Judge had a 9-minute long speech, which, yeah, was a bit long. But, you know, on the flip side, you don't need to cut people off at 30 seconds. There should be a happy medium. Like, why are we hearing about Simu Liu talk about his torn ACL for 5 minutes? Or why is Timothée Chalamet presenting Game of the Year instead of an actual developer? You know, in previous years, they had the director of the last year's winner like Neil Druckmann or Joseph Fares to present the awards. So technically it should have been Miyazaki this year for Elden Ring. If he wasn't there, that's cool. You couldn't have gotten any other developer. It had to be Timothée Chalamet. So that sort of stuff is really cringeworthy, and I could understand as a developer that you'd feel pretty insulted by that. And then just some of the categories not even being read on stage. Like Jeff just went through like six of them rapid fire, including like Best Indie, which is like, that should be what the Game Awards is about, putting an indie on the stage and celebrating them. And I'm not just saying that because it's the Canadian team. If it was any indie developer, so to their credit, right before we started recording, IGN actually did a really great piece where here's what those people would have said in their speeches if they were actually given stage time. So they spoke to Thierry from Sabotage about Sea of Stars. They spoke to Capcom because they won the best VR game, a few other developers. So that was just a really nice sort of way to pay tribute to them. But yeah, that's... I definitely, like Steve said, admire the respect. I admire the amount of work that goes into putting these shows together. Like, I think people underestimate that, especially because Jeff is independent. So that I respect that side of it, but there needs to be a better balance going forward. For sure.
Yeah, I thought it was weird to have Kojima talk and then bring on Jordan Peele as well, and it was very long. It was like, I think that was the long, I think he had the longest speak time, which is didn't feel right, especially since, like, I feel like the winners should have more time to speak. I feel like they were really pushing the whole, oh, these guys get to talk more because they are putting out a future game that might come out in 3-5 years. Whereas people who worked hard, finished games, released them this year, and won awards should have had more time to talk. It felt really weird. And my friends were all like, I was watching the show with my roommates in the living room. We were like, what the hell is going on? Like, why are they like just keep going? Like, they just kept naming off winners. It definitely felt catered towards it. Definitely didn't feel catered towards the winners, which I feel like is awkward for an award ceremony.
Yeah, I think like IGN did the breakdown. It was like 18% of the total 3-hour runtime was dedicated to like the awards, and 82% was the actual like ads and everything else, which is like, it's ridiculous. Like, and like Steve was saying, like Larian was paying tribute to their animation lead who died like a month ago, and you're getting the wrap-up sign there, like, and this is for Game of the Year too. Like, even if they weren't paying tribute to someone, you'd think Game of the Year would get the longest time on stage. But like, it's like, or Neil Newbon, he was giving a lovely speech about, oh, the fans who reached out to Larian and said, you know, you were touched by our game, you moved us, and he was getting teary-eyed. Like, what are we doing here? Why are we not giving them more time? Like, it's ridiculous. So it's upsetting as someone who just loves games, so I can't imagine what it is for the people who actually make them.
Chris, what are your thoughts on this and the Game Awards?
I'm basically in the same camp as you guys. I don't have a whole lot to add other than it was disappointing to see, especially, you know, he's not running the Spike Game Awards anymore, where you have to fit within a certain amount of time. We are on Twitch, and there were so many game announcements, and I will say, actually, if you really look at the list of games that were announced and all of that, there are some amazing games in there. But the reality is that by overpacking it with all of those segments and the celebrities and all of the more superficial elements, you actually lose track of what's important, even aside from the awards. Some of the biggest announcements were lost in the fray, to the point where I was watching with a bunch of people online, and they forgot half of the announcements, or they were tuning things out because the show was just way too fast-paced. And I agree, it was an overcorrection. I think you said it, Brad, where last year maybe you had that one thing. And to Jeff's credit as well, he tries to really take the criticism he gets in stride and apply it the next year. And we've seen that several years in a row now. So I'm hoping that there is a correction. But the reality also happens to be that they do have to pay for the show. So there's bound to be some advertising. And it just feels like that balance isn't there just yet. So really hopeful for the future. I think a lot of valid criticisms have been made about it. But I still think it was, you know, a decent show overall. And I have faith that next year will be a lot better.
Yeah, and even if someone does talk for too long, like Chris Judge from last year, it was long. It felt very long. I remember it being like, man, he's been talking for a while. But it was still really heartfelt. which I feel like is more important than just people advertising their upcoming game that, again, won't come out for several years. And they'll get a chance to talk about that game, they want to highlight, when they're up for Game Awards, right? Like, they'll get their chance.
And to the point of the Chris Judge thing, I think someone pointed out that it feels like Jeff is really trying to recapture that, like, Keanu Reeves Cyberpunk E3 2019 moment with all the celebrities. I think the reason that worked is, A, he was actually in the game, which is a step up from some of these other celebrities, and B, it's Keanu Reeves. He's super passionate. He's super wholesome. We love to see him there, and that just came out naturally. It feels like a lot of these other ones are forced, but to the point of the Chris Judge thing, it's like, if you had cut him off after 30 seconds, you know, we wouldn't have gotten that speech, and that speech went viral in its own way, right? And then it became a meme, and they brought him back this year. So it's like, by kind of forcing celebrities to kind of create these viral moments, instead of just letting other people who are more directly connected to the games just naturally sort of go up and talk, you'll get those viral moments. Like, I went back and watched earlier today, and then it had me getting emotional again. From 2016, there was a speech from the developer of That Dragon Cancer, which was based on his son's short, you know, he passed away when he was like 5 years old dealing with cancer, and he made a game about that. And it was super emotional. Everyone loved it. It went on for 3 minutes, which is the perfect length, right? It's in the grand scheme of things, how long does that take up from the show? And everyone still talks about that. Everyone still remembers it. It moved people. It's like, that's the sort of thing, if they'd cut him off after 30 seconds this year, we wouldn't have gotten that sort of beautiful expression there. So yeah, I just feel like, just let people talk, and you're going to get, if you're so concerned about those sort of viral moments and everything, like, you're going to get them if you just let people speak anyways. So
yeah, I mean, the Game Awards is already basically 3 hours long. Like, you can let people talk. At the end of the day, like, there is time.
The reason Ben Starr has blown up is not just because of his performance. It's because he's so passionate about Final Fantasy as a fan. Why didn't we have him up there at some point? He is such a great speaker. He's so just part of the fan base, man. Why was he? And I get it. He was nominated for an award. But at the Oscars, we have lots of people who are nominated for awards who are up there presenting as well.
I think Jeff also has to grapple with audience expectations too, because I mean, we're all entrenched in the industry so much so that obviously we wanted to celebrate the developers and stuff like that. But then you see online, like, a lot of people on social media are there just for the award, or not the awards, but for the announcements and reveals. Like, for them, the Game Awards is just Winter Game Fest or Winter E3. You know, they don't really care about, oh, who's gonna win this, who's gonna care that. So of course Jeff wants to cater to them to some extent to make sure, okay, we're not gonna lose our audience in that respect. But then at the same time, he is losing, you know, a lot of the good grace of people like us, people that are very in the industry, whether from the development side, the publisher side, or the media side. It's just, I can't imagine what Jeff and his team has to go through in order to, like, balance the budget, balance, you know, the production side, but then also cater to two varying audiences that want something wholly different from the show. So it's a lot to go into year after year. But I think that Jeff is, to his credit, always trying to keep an open ear and be like, okay, what can we do better next year? What can we do there? But it's just, it's all about managing those expectations at the end of the day, and just making sure that we're doing something for the service of the industry and not kind of just making it exactly what the Spike the video games were, which was a Hollywood-esque kind of, you know, spectacle. And yeah, it does. This year was the year where I was like, oh, you're kind of threading that line between, you know, die a hero, live long enough to see yourself become a villain. And I hope that Jeff and the Game Awards don't kind of become the Two-Face and can kind of stay the Harvey Dent side.
That's funny. Who were your favorite people you guys met at the Game Awards this year, Steve and Brad?
Yeah, I think for me, it was, I got to shake hands with Doug Bowser. That was a lovely moment. I got to, congratulate him on, like, all the nominations. This was prior to the Game Awards. It was the night before, so I just got to thank him for all the nominations, thank him for, you know, all the work that Nintendo has done this year. Obviously, they've had one heck of a year. But other than that, yeah, it was, Brad kind of touched on it. Meeting Ben Starr was really cool. He's a very wholesome and very nice gentleman. Todd Howard as well. I know, Brad, me and you don't see eye to eye on Starfield, which is totally fine, but I really enjoyed that game. So again, got to just kind of congratulate Todd on the Herculean effort of launching a brand new IP, something that doesn't really happen these days, especially for a big studio like Bethesda. So yeah, those three were standout moments. I am still a little salty that Dana, screwed us over so badly in meeting Sam Lake, like steered us so incredibly wrong. I hopped onto the plane to get to LA. Yeah, just briefly, like we're in the lobby of the JW. I walked onto my plane to get into the LA, and I was like, my one goal is just to meet Sam Lake, congratulate him, tell him how impactful Alan Wake 2 was, how profound that experience was to me. That's my one and only thing that I want to do. So we're in the lobby of the JW, the night's winding down, and me and Brad are thinking, you know what, we're never going to meet Sam Lake. He's not coming through the JW. He has more important things to do. Lo and behold, the man walks through on the other side of the room. Me and Brad were like, okay, we're gonna do this, let's go. Dana's like, he's over there, he's by the Christmas tree, go now, you guys can go meet him. Me and Brad, we beeline it over, and the lobby is packed, like you can just miss people, it's a pool of people. So by the time we circle around, get to that Christmas tree, he's already made it to the other side, the original side that we were on. And we walk back and we're like, all right, you know, kind of defeated, and Dana looks at us square in the eye and she says, oh, I just got a picture with him. Like, he just came over to the spot we were standing in. We were bamboozled, with a capital B, and I'll never forgive her for that. That was so disrespectful.
She met him with Andrew too, and I'm pretty sure neither of them have much, if any, time into Alan Wake 2. And I'm like, it's Steve's game of the year. It's like one of my top three. We both played it, loved it. We were so hyped when the song played. I'm like, come on.
That's so funny. I feel so bad for you guys. But next year, maybe. Yeah.
For me, I guess, yeah. I mean, seeing Ben Starr again was awesome, because I met him in Toronto. I met him at Summer Game Fest after the Final Fantasy 16 launch event with Dana. And then I met him in Toronto again with Andrew at the Final Fantasy convention. Then I met him at the Warframe thing. And then, yeah, we ran into him in the lobby again. So that was, I've met him four times now, and he's amazing.
You guys
are best
friends now.
He's wearing a shirt that said Squall. Yeah, he remembered me because I was wearing when I went to KoopoCon, I made a shirt. I had a shirt made where it's the Mario art, but it's made to look like Clive from Final Fantasy 16, because there was a whole thing that Ben did where, I'm Mario now. The guy, I'm blank. Oh my God, I'm having a brain fart. Charles Martinet, there we go, was retired from the role. And then, Neil Newbon was awesome. And then just kind of adjacent to the event, we were at, on our last full day there, we were at Universal for Mario World, and we were in the line because there was a technical issue, so we were waiting for ages. And I just opened my phone and I just see, Yuri Lowenthal and the entire cast of Spider-Man 2 are going to be at this video game store just 10 minutes down the street. And I'm like, okay, we're going to go there, Andrew. I know you haven't played the game yet, but we're going there. So I went, so I got to meet Yuri Lowenthal, Najee Jeter, who plays Miles, and Candyman / Venom himself, Tony Todd, which was super cool.
So cool.
Been signed by them. So yeah, they were.
I'd love to meet Sasuke.
Yeah, they were awesome. So that was cool. So I met three of the six best performance nominees at this show, I guess, and around the show, which is cool. And then I met Chris Judge last year. So whoever wins best performance next year, I have to meet as well, I guess. But yeah, just kind of being in the same room as them and seeing these people walk by and everything. It's like a lot of them, like, you grew up like playing their games, you admire their work. So it's just to be even in the vicinity of them and see them kind of pass by. It's like, oh, that's so cool.
That is very cool. And I'm super jealous.
It's okay, Dean. We met Brad. So by extension, we have met, it's like the, what is it?
1 degree of separation.
1 degree, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Any surprises? Anything interesting you guys found out at the Game Awards in terms of the actual winners or noms who didn't win or stuff like that? I'll get into that later. But
are we talking purely the winners and nominees or the announcements as well?
You know what? We can talk about the announcements as well.
Okay. I feel like we've largely kind of covered the
winners. Yeah, we can do talk about the announcements as well, except for do not talk about the winner of the Game Awards yet. We're not there yet.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll just start. For me, I mean, obviously, the highlight for me was getting the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth main theme, because he started by saying, oh, one of the most legendary composers in gaming. I'm like, no, it can't be. And then he mispronounced his name, but he's like, Nobuo Uematsu. I'm like, oh, Jeff. but then it's like, oh, the theme song for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and it's then you have them performing it there, and it's the singer from Greatest Showman. She's got a fantastic voice, and the trailer's beautiful, and I'm losing it. I'm like, I'm trying to, I always cognizant I'm in a public place, so I don't want to, like, I won't pop off as much as I would at home, but their tears were definitely shed. And everything with the marketing for that game has been so on point so far. Like, they're giving us a big ballad for Aerith just to twist the knife. Like, they even show the shot where she's praying in the temple and the Forbidden Capital, and then the Sephiroth feather drops. It's like, they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. And it's like, is that a red herring to the song, like, or is it like suggest, like, there's so many things. It's like, could she live at the end of this? Will she survive to part three? Will she die? It's crazy. And then that performance also gave us that incredible Ben Starr meme where the light's just flashing on his face and he looks like dead inside, which is hilarious. So I loved that for it. Yeah, everything about that game, it just looks incredible to me. I'm obviously so on board for that. You'll really only appreciate it, Chris, but what I loved about that theme is it reminded me a lot of the, like, Eyes on Me from FF8 and Melodies of Life from FF9, like, those very powerful vocal songs, because 7 never really had that. Like, it had One Winged Angel, but that's more of a boss theme. It didn't have, like, a main theme that was a vocal piece, so that was, really reminded me, took me back to my childhood in that sense, so I loved it.
And that's where the remake element comes in, right, is they're taking what's there and they're expanding on it in such amazing ways, and you don't expect it with the music. We think about the gameplay and the story, and now we're getting all of these new incredible tracks that are going to be remembered along with the original score, and I'm so excited. I'm there with you.
They get it so much, because in the blog post they show all the screenshots of the different people from the date scene at the Gold Saucer, and they have Barrett there. It's like, they kept Barrett. That's awesome. Like, that's that was just one of those funny things in the background, but they understand that, like, it's very silly, and it's dramatic, but it's also very silly, so I appreciate that. Another game that I'll give a shout out to, which I know Steve's a Philistine when it comes to JRPGs, so this isn't for you, but I know Chris will appreciate Metaphor ReFantazio, which is a horrible
game.
That
game looks cool.
But yeah, it's from the creators of Persona, the director of Persona 3, 4, and 5, and Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne. You know, you got the composer from those games as well, Shoji Meguro, and then you have people who worked on Nier Automata, Evangelion, all these, like, so it's like a stacked development team, and it's so exciting because it's breaking off from that Persona high schoolers setting, which I'm a little overplayed at this point. Like, I would hope Persona 6 at least does something a little different with that sort of thing, but this is, like, completely different. It's not school, it's like a high fantasy world, kind of like post-apocalyptic in a way, and just it retains the style of Persona, but just on a grander level, and the music is not really as funky as you'd expect. It's a lot more, like, dramatic and operatic, so it's just everything about it looks great. It's coming fall 2024.
And if I can expand on that a little bit, just because Persona is one of my all-time favorite series, but what I really like about this is I'm with you. I think it's okay. It's now time to move beyond the high school setting. And this, though, doubles down on the bonds that you build in those games without it feeling like it needs to be a romantic thing. Like, the confidants in 5 really felt like a lot of them really pushed into that angle. And here it feels like, no, you're building up a team of people to take part in one giant tournament arc. And I love that. And there's an interesting mix of real-time combat and turn-based combat that we haven't seen from this team before. And I think it's going to surprise a lot of people, maybe who are only familiar with Persona and not some of Atlas's other games beyond maybe Shin Megami Tensei. I think this is playing to a lot of their strengths, and the style of it absolutely some of the best looking screens I've seen ever. Like, there are some shots that I saw in that initial reveal trailer where I use it as a background on my computer. Like, they're just so striking the way they've used their style. So yeah, really, really excited about that game too.
And I'll just give a quick shout out as well. It's kind of could have fallen into the news section as well, but we got the full reveal of Archetype Entertainment's new game, Exodus, which is super cool because For people who don't know, that's an Austin-based studio, but it's led by James Olin, who was the lead designer on KOTOR. So he's from Canada. He's from Edmonton. We used to work at BioWare. So KOTOR, he worked on Dragon Age Origins, the original Baldur's Gates, and the story is being co-written by Drew Karpyshyn, who also worked on KOTOR, Baldur's Gate, and Mass Effect. So you have two of BioWare's biggest heavy hitters, like two of the OGs from KOTOR. I was very fortunate to speak to them earlier this year, and at the time, they almost didn't let me do the interview because they're just like, we're not allowed to say anything about anything. And I'm like, okay, I won't even ask you about your game. But anyways, it's super exciting to see what that is. And it's kind of focused, for context, that's the game with Matthew McConaughey. I'm assuming he's only doing it because it's being made in Texas, where he's from. It's probably the only reason, but it's kind of cool because it's centered around the idea of time dilation, which was in, you know, Interstellar with Matthew McConaughey as well. The whole idea that, you know, 5 minutes for you could be 5 years for someone else, and kind of playing that into a choice-based narrative is very interesting. You know, you go to this planet to try to find something, but then maybe that 50 years has passed on another planet by the time you get there. Like, that's a very interesting concept for a choice-based narrative game. And so it's really cool to see that sort of BioWare DNA in there, and these Canadians really leading the charge on that. So I'm super hyped for that game.
How about you, Steve? You haven't spoken in a little bit. Anything you're super excited for, or any surprises, anything like that?
Yeah, I think the Blade game was definitely a surprise. That was one I actually heard a little bit of scuttlebutt going into the awards, like a few days before I even got to LA. I was told by a few people, they're like, make sure you keep an eye out on this award show. There is probably going to be an Arcane Lyon game coming out. And I was like, okay. And then I heard that it might be a Blade game. I was like, there's no way. There's absolutely no way in hell that this is going to end up happening. And as soon as the trailer started, and I saw, you know, the door with the cross on it, I was like, oh boy, we are in the thick of it now. And as it goes on and on, I was like, oh, this has the potential to be a very cool game. I mean, Arcane has been known for, you know, Dishonored and Deathloop, very frenetic and gameplay heavy games, and I think that transitions so well with a character like Blade, who, you know, is very agile and has a whole arsenal of abilities and weapons. I think that's a really cool kind of license for Arcane to kind of get a hold of. But obviously, it's very, very early on. We're probably going to have to wait a while for that game. The other one, obviously, Chris brought it up, but it was OD from Hideo Kojima. I'm down for anything he touches, honestly, as long as he gets that kind of auteur freedom of just create whatever kind of weird stuff you want to. I'm there day one. I love that stuff. Similar to Alan Wake and Sam Lake, let creators just kind of break the mold and do something that is unconventional in the industry. I'm down for. So him working with Jordan Peele, it's awesome. Him kind of forming this Avengers coalition of other creators or actors, I don't really know, but either way, I think it's really cool. And the fact that it's kind of built on Xbox's cloud platform is also awesome. And hey, if it's anything like we were promised with PT, That's a surefire win for me, because PT is probably one of the coolest things to ever come from the video game industry, in my opinion. That blew me away. So I'm down for some sort of like spiritual successor.
Yeah, I loved PT. I also was very excited to see Blade. Patrick had mentioned to me something from Arcane. He was like, oh, Dishonored 3. And I was like, it's not going to be Dishonored 3, buddy. I don't know why. I just don't think it will be. And then to see Blade, it was like, oh, this is going to be sick. I am really excited for it. The only issue is that, I mean, their last game also had vampires in it. So
That was the Austin game, or Austin studio, though. That wasn't the
that's true. It wasn't Leon. Yeah, you're right.
Exactly.
You're
right. So that that's the only saving grace there, because I would be right there with you where I'm like, you're double downing on vampires? I don't know about this one.
Yeah, you're right. It wasn't Leon.
Well, and I think there's been a lot of reports about what happened with Redfall anyways. I don't think...
Of course,
yeah. I was just joking. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, and I'm glad that it's Arcane doing it, because, to your point, Blade is an interesting character to do something on. Like, you know, PlayStation went with Spider-Man and Wolverine, which, two great characters, but two very, like, saturated characters. Like, we've seen them a lot. So it's cool, like, we haven't really gotten anything from Blade since the Wesley Snipes movies, because the Mahershala Ali movie's been in development hell for like 5 years at this point. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get the game before the movie at this rate. But it's cool because at first, if I heard a Blade game, I'm like, oh, it's probably just going to be like a Devil May Cry knockoff. But no, knowing that it's, you know, Arkane doing it, like, they're going to do something really stylish and interesting with it. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, give me a Dishonored, but with Blade, I'm in for it. And Killing Vampires, I'm cool with it.
They also have a passion for level design and kind of the different kind of planes of existence while going through a game. I think that's really cool for a character like Blade to be on the rooftops, but also like maybe a street level as well. That sounds cool to me.
For me, I was also... a funny part of the awards for me was when Jeff said, thanks, Dinga, at the end when right before, and like, and then my roommates were like, did he just say the N-word? Because just not hearing it. And then I was like, wait, did he? And we played it. And I'm like, we kept replaying it. And we're like, no, what is he saying there? And then I was like, oh, no, it's Dinga, like the developer name. Yeah, that makes sense. But we were all like, what just happened?
Jeff is just wilding out on the stage. He's just feeling himself.
Oh my gosh. Like, who was that guy? One of the developer. I think he was a developer who came on.
Joseph Ferris?
Joseph Ferris, yeah.
The wasted one? Yeah, dude was just out of it. That was insane. I like Jeff was just like, get him off this stage.
He ended up winning Game of the Year. That's what a character arc for Joseph Ferris.
Well, that's, again, to the point of you. If you cut him off, we wouldn't have gotten that viral moment, and he wouldn't have come back to the Game Awards like 10 times, and everyone loves him, right? So it's like, yep, just let developers talk. Yeah, he presented Game of the Year to Miyazaki last year, which is cool.
Very cool. I was also surprised that Senua Saga Hellblade did not get a release date. It got a year, 2024, which is insane. How does that game not have an actual date? It was announced... years ago.
The 2019 Game Awards.
Yeah, it was the first Xbox game for the new console generation shown. That's true.
Yeah, insane. I can't believe that game's not out yet.
But it looks beautiful, though. I mean...
I don't care.
Granted, take away the fact that there wasn't even, like, a release window. I was locked in during that entire trailer. I was like, I cannot believe this game looks as gorgeous as it does.
I don't care, man. They should have a date by now.
That's true.
Like, give us a month even. Give us winter 2024. All they said was 2024.
Does speak, to your point, that does speak to Xbox's ongoing problem of, we have the games, they're coming, but we don't have a release window for you, they're coming. It's like, how many times do we need to see this game? Just release it already.
Holy.
So, I get it.
And I was excited by No Rest for the Wicked. I thought that game looked really cool. And I probably will butcher this, but Tales of Kinzara. It's like an African style game, but I think it was made by the same people who did Ori in the Blind like Forest.
It looked awesome.
Bayek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bayek from Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looked very, very awesome, and I was super excited for those two games. Yeah. Chris, share?
I'll be really quick. You guys called out a lot of them already. Windblown looked awesome. Oh, that's coming from the Dead Cells team. Looks really stylish. Cool. More gory than I was expecting. The trailer led us to believe that it was going to be cute, and it was not.
Even the trailer was really kind of cool. Gory, though.
Totally. You're right. definitely want to give a shout out to Visions of Mana. That series, I feel like, hasn't had a really strong entry in a while, and this looked gorgeous. Really, really excited to check that out. And then I think the only other one that I would shout out would be Big Walk. That was from the team behind Untitled Goose Game, and what a fun time that looks like. They've managed to make a puzzle game a social experience, which... man, yeah, just give me that all day. That's one of those ones where you can catch up with your friends, go do zany antics, and still actually activate your brain once in a while. So fully on board for that. Otherwise, I guess just quick shout out to Unseen, the studio that Okumi Nakamura founded. We've kind of known about her studio for a while, and obviously they weren't ready to show gameplay yet, but I also feel like they are hiring a lot of talent at the moment, so this was a way for them to be like, here's our project. If you like what it looks like, come on board. She's such an incredible
talent.
That
was Kimuri, right? Kimuri? Is that the name of the game or no?
Yeah. Kimuri. Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce it personally. K-E-M-U-R-I.
Yeah.
It looks super cool. Really no cool. idea what the gameplay is like, but just the style of it and everything like that. That would be the last one that I would shout out. Lots of cool announcements. Like, listen to how many we just talked about and how passionate we are for them. And I feel like a lot of that got lost in the noise. So if any of this sounded cool to you, definitely go to Mobile Syrup and check out all of the trailers and that sort of stuff, because there's some really, really cool games coming.
And last but not least, Baldur's Gate 3 won the game of the year. When the developer went on stage, he was just like, I didn't think we were going to win anymore, because Alan Wake 2 won so many awards. It was just, it was either going to be BG3 or Alan Wake 2. I haven't played Alan Wake 2 yet. I said in the last podcast that will be like my winter holiday game for when we have the time off. But I have put in over 100 hours in BG3. So I was pretty excited that it won. How about you guys feel about this?
Yeah, it was well-deserved. I mean, it's so funny when you look back at our first episode when we did the fantasy draft, not to jump ahead or anything, but at the time, I was like, oh, I'm looking forward to Baldur's Gate 3, but in no way in hell did I think that people were going to latch onto that game as much as it did. And then, you know, lo and behold, it became like this cultural phenomenon that even like broke through the industry into mainstream audiences and stuff. Like, I had friends text me that had no right being interested in Baldur's Gate 3, being like, do I need to play this game or anything? I was like, you of all people, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, it's just really cool to see this game that, again, is like super unconventional in today's kind of standard, even when you look at RPGs, kind of have all this acclaim and was received so well with critics and players and everything like that. So yeah, I mean, props to them. Larian is a very talented studio, obviously, but man, you just have to now think, what are they going to do next and how much fervor is going to be behind that project? Because yeah, this Baldur's Gate 3 like swept the nation this year, and like I think the popularity is just going to continue into 2024 because of its latest, you know, launch on Xbox, and the whole new audience is going to be able to adopt the game, and then I'm sure there's going to be additional support in the future. But yeah, it's awesome to see, and I'm so happy for that team.
Yeah, not much else to say. It was my game of the year as well. When I sort of unilaterally decide Mobile Syrup's top 10 games of the year, you can expect it to be pretty high up there as well. Yeah, it's one of those things where, like Steve said, didn't expect it. It just kind of blew into the zeitgeist. Even my grandpa was asking, like, what's this Baldur's Gate thing that I'm hearing about? Like, which is hilarious. Like, I was with him, and yeah, he's just on his iPad, and he's like, what is this game? Which is hilarious, because he doesn't never really asked me anything like that. And just, yeah, it's one of those things where I've seen a lot of people, and I feel the same way, like, kind of said, oh, I didn't think this would be my cup of tea, didn't really think I would like it, and then they played it and they loved it. And that was kind of with me. I'm like, I wasn't sure. Like, I've heard a lot of good things about their previous games. I know they're obviously a quality studio, but I even had a friend who's like tried to get me and another friend to play Divinity with him, but I'm like, I kind of looked at him like, I don't know. But now that I've played Baldur's Gate, it's like, okay, now I would be down. I'd definitely be down. Yeah, it's a remarkable, astonishing achievement. It's one of those things where a lot of the time every year we see games that are high rated that are up there, but they won't necessarily have a lot of staying power, I don't think. Like, they're just kind of like Resident Evil 4 remake this year, for example, really good game, but I don't think it's like, you know, going to be thought of in many years to come. But like Baldur's Gate 3 is like one of those things where when people say, oh, this is one of the best RPGs of all time, one of the greatest games of all time, it's like, yeah, I understand, I get it.
Yeah, Dean, what about you? You put a lot of hours into Baldur's Gate.
Oh yeah, I loved it. I was pretty excited that it won Game of the Year. I was at that point where I was like, man, it might be Alan Wake 2, just because of how, like, I think it won Best Direction, Alan Wake 2, and I was just like, man, like, the Baldur's Gate might lose this, but it won, and I was like, yeah, this is awesome. And I'm really happy about it. Pretty much, yeah.
Now, I do need to take a second, and this segment is called Chris Feels Himself, because this doesn't happen very often where I did know
this guy.
And so I need you guys to pretend you're hearing music right now for a second so that the audience can take in this moment of Chris Chris Feels Himself. Okay, right, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
This guy.
Cue the Jeff Keighley, please wrap it up sign.
Yeah.
140 hours in, and I still haven't beaten it yet. And let's move on to our next segment, our nostalgia segment. So this is probably your first time hearing this, Steve. The Syrup Cast and Syrup Arcade Cast are now doing a nostalgia segment. And before we go into our fantasy draft, let's look back 10 years ago at that Game Award winner, which would have been the Spike Video Game Awards, because the actual Game Awards, or not the actual Game Awards, but Jeff Keighley's This Game Awards hasn't been yet. It didn't start till 2014. And during the and in 2013, the Spike Video Game Award winner was Grand Theft Auto V. I'm not shocked by hearing that. I've never played Grand Theft Auto of any number of all at all, but
wow.
Yeah, well, wow. Yeah, but it's very different from Baldur's Gate 3, but they just put out a trailer for Grand Theft Auto 6 too, so kind of
there's no powers or magic in Grand Theft Auto, so that's why he didn't play it.
Facts.
Fair.
I guess facts. If you enable cheats in the older games, that's a form of power.
Yeah, you could get the flying car, like, you know, Harry Potter. Well,
and
Harry
in Potter, Grand Theft Auto 5, if you trip on peyote, you can meet aliens and stuff. Is that sort of along those lines?
No.
Okay, darn.
Fair enough.
No, you guys excited for Grand Theft Auto 6? I assume you guys are.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm really stoked. I mean, Grand Theft Auto 5 always has a special place in my heart. It actually released 2 weeks after I moved to Toronto, so I just vividly remember leaving my friends like back home in Guelph and like coming to Toronto and that being the first midnight release, the last like big midnight release I think I've ever been to, and just kind of, you know, linking up with friends back home when GTA Online launched and everything like that. So yeah, it's definitely like a time and place kind of game. But yeah, flash forward to Grand Theft Auto 6's trailer and everything, I'm just kind of blown away by the pedigree Rockstar has, like just in those first opening moments of that, you know, the main character we're introduced to, Lucia, she turns around for a moment while looking at outside at the jail, and just the lighting of it all, the fidelity, it's like, holy cow, you guys are on like a whole nother level when it comes to just high performance, high quality game and trailers. But yeah, just it's such a nice kind of trip back to Vice City, which is based off Miami. I just love to see like the color palette, the pinks, the blues, the oranges. It's just a really cool showcase of what Rockstar Games can do. The two things that really stood out to me was this whole like Bonnie and Clyde romantic crime relationship you're kind of in. And then the other thing that I thought was really cool to see, especially from a game like Rockstar that's going to drive like a lot of people's attention, is just the diversity of just NPCs and stuff like that, whether it's, you know, different, skin colors or body types and everything like that. It's not just, oh, it's a city full of, you know, boring white dudes. It's, There's a lot of really cool diversity in the game, especially, you know, going back, it's based off Miami, which rightfully so, it should be, have a diverse, cityscape. So it's awesome to see, and I'm really excited to see what Rockstar can do after Red Dead Redemption 2, which to me still is one of the most immersive kind of worlds to kind of explore. So to see them take the Rage engine, evolve it over all these years, and kind of deliver us a new Grand Theft Auto, I'm super excited, and I can't wait for this.
Awesome. Thank you, Steve. That was very in-depth. Brad, Chris, any thoughts?
For me, I'm intrigued by it more. I've never had a super big connection to GTA, especially with Red Dead being so much more up my alley. I'm not even like a Western guy, but I generally gravitate towards stories with some kind of emotional hook. Like, GTA's never really had that for me. So like, Red Dead 2 still has one of the best stories in gaming, I would say. Roger Clark's performance as Arthur Morgan, and then obviously John Marston on the side there. Like, I love that. That's still like the pinnacle for me. So I find it, I don't know if GTA 6 would top that in terms of emotional highs, but I am intrigued by the game because it is the first, you know, GTA in so many years. I will say I am very curious, and it could go either way, how they're going to handle like the commentary on America, because this is a, you know, this is a series that's always satirized America, but it's been 10 years since we've gotten the last one. It'll be 12 years by the time it comes out. And it's like, there's so, America is such a parody of itself now. Like, it's kind of hard to imagine what they're going to say that's kind of interesting about it, because so much has happened in that 12 years. So if anyone can say something interesting and funny and insightful, it'll be Rockstar. So I don't doubt that they'll do something about it, but I am very curious to see what that'll be, because that especially it's Florida. It's like Florida's just a joke. Well,
I think you kind of already see it in that a lot of the trailer is based off Florida already. Like, you have like the Florida man, and you have, you know, Miami Joker in there, and you have like all these clips and snippets based off like viral videos and stuff like that. So I kind of think that Rockstar is already presenting us some sort of representation of what its satire is going to be, where it is a lot of it is based so much on social media and pulling from real world events, but putting their own like Rockstar kind of twist on
it. Yeah, I mean,
if you will.
That's kind of like a superficial look at it. I'm just curious about how it'll handle it on a deeper level. Like, even I think back to one of the surprisingly interesting parts of GTA 5 is when they get into like the whole U.S. waterboarding stuff,
right?
Or even like there's a whole weird conversation on like hipsters in America, like stuff like that is like stuff you wouldn't necessarily expect when you look at first glance. So I'm optimistic that they're going to do it well, but yeah, I'm more curious if anything. I need to see more. It was just a 2-minute trailer. Again, the game is 2 years out still, so it's like maybe when we get closer to it, I'll start to feel excited. But to me, it's very distant right now. So I'm intrigued by it, I'll say, more so than genuinely excited. But I'm sure once we get closer, I'll feel it.
It's always been satire, and this felt like I was just watching the news. We are now at the point where you can't parody real life. Real life parodies itself. Like, there's nothing stranger than fiction, right? So, but what about you, Dean? So you haven't played one before. Did watching this trailer get you excited? Do you think this might be your first Grand Theft Auto?
Probably not. I have no interest in it, really.
Just writing it off completely.
Yeah, I probably will not touch it. I probably won't look at gameplay either.
You don't want to twerk on a car?
Zero interest in it.
Okay.
Fair. Yeah.
You will be like the one person on the planet that never buys it.
I also didn't play Red Dead, if that matters. Because, again, no magic, no science fiction, no anything I really care about. So
zombies.
I don't really like zombies.
I
used to be really afraid
right
of zombies growing up, which is why I didn't play Last of Us ever. I'm no longer as afraid of zombies, but...
We go. So the other games that were probably up for Game of the Year that year would have been The Last of Us. It would have been Bioshock Infinite. And, like, I'm just trying
Tomb
to think...
Raider,
2013, think. Tomb Raider. Yeah, absolutely. There was a whole list of games that would have been up for it. So Grand Theft Auto V... probably looking back was definitely one of the strongest contenders, and so it's kind of cool to look back and say, oh, 10 years ago we had that win, and now we're getting Grand Theft Auto 6 announced. And yeah, what a time.
I am happy to hear, just very quickly, from what we understand, the Rockstar's development process has really improved behind the scenes, because they're notorious around the whole GTA Red Dead 2 era, where there's apparently a lot of crunch and kind of a toxic workplace, and supposedly that's based on what we've heard from reporting, that's really improved, which is nice to see. So in that sense, if that's why part of the reason why the game's still 2 years out, where they're not avoiding a lot of crunch on it or whatever, I'm happy to wait as long as needed. Please don't kill yourselves making this game. So that's really cool to hear.
All right, fantasy draft time. All right, guys, so Chris will lead us through the fantasy draft. I want to hear the people's scores and their highest games and the winning name as well. But I want you to go in the order of loser to winner.
Okay, perfect. So how this worked, for anybody who wasn't with us at the beginning of the year, we drafted what we thought would be the highest scoring games on OpenCritic, which is essentially Metacritic, but specifically for video games. And so we each chose 3 games at the beginning of the year. And then we chose an additional 2 games halfway through the year, so that way we could cover anything that was announced. What was exciting about this is the first time we did it, and we rolled a die, I believe, to determine who would go first. And from there, we kind of reversed it for the second draft. How it's going to work is we drafted five games. We are only taking the top three scores from each of our pools. So
that was top four.
Is it top four?
I thought
Hold
so.
On, let's...
I
thought so. Oh, this I thought it was top four as well. Scores.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. It says here, top four games will count towards your score. If the game doesn't release, it counts as a zero.
All right.
Chris, we know you won. You don't need to inflate it, artificially inflate it, so you win even better.
Yeah,
okay, okay, okay. Here, here. I'm just going to really quickly add, I'm going to get an additional nine.
What does Kind of Funny call themselves? A dumpster truck on fire? That's what you guys are hearing right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is the back end. This is what you probably shouldn't be hearing. So, Steve, let's start with your team here. So you took Starfield.
Wait, is Steve the bottom, though?
We're about to find out. I'm just going to list the games that that Steve took while I add up the scores here. So you took Starfield, Mortal Kombat 1, Forza Motorsport, Marvel's Spider-Man 2, and Hollow Knight Silksong. Obviously, Hollow Knight not coming, but if you had to guess at the beginning of the year which of your games would score the highest, which one would it have been?
If it came out, it would have been Silksong, like with a bullet. I think I was very confident, very bullish in what Team Cherry kind of discussed early on in this year of, you know, targeting a 2024 launch, but now I really regret this one. I'll tell you that.
We all laughed at you, I remember.
Yeah, yeah. It was one of those. Either I get laughed at by everyone, or I come onto this episode at this time of year, and I'm laughing at all of you. Obviously, that didn't work out.
Dean, you took Hogwarts Legacy, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon, Lies of P, and Lords of the Fallen. What were your expectations? Did you have a game that you thought maybe would be the high score?
Hogwarts would do better, and I'm honestly blaming J.K. Rowling for that.
Yeah, good call. Yeah, it's definitely her fault. I'll be honest, I'm kind of surprised Armored Core 6 and Lies of P didn't score better. I'm not saying like by a huge amount, but even just marginally. Like Lies of P as an 82, I think is downright criminal. That's wild to me that it scored a low 80. Same with Armored Core with 85. I would have put these like high 80s. But maybe that's just my skewed metric based on being a fan of both of these games.
I haven't played Lies of P, so I can't comment on the quality. But I think as someone who's more of an outsider with the Soulsborne genre, I feel kind of fatigued by every game being a Soulsborne nowadays. So I wonder if that was probably part of it. And I don't get me wrong. It seems like a very good execution on that formula from everything I've seen and heard. But I mean, there have been a lot. Like, even around the time Lords of the Fallen came out, we got Jedi Survivor earlier this year. There's a lot of that kind of game nowadays, so I wonder if that was probably part of it. But I That's hear you fair. On Armored Core. Yeah. I thought that would... I've heard nothing but amazing things about Armored Core, and it's something I wanted to check out. As someone who doesn't generally enjoy most From games, that sort of thing appealed to me more, to be honest. So I just haven't gone. I was waiting for it to go on sale, to be honest, and it never did for Black Friday. But maybe
I actually tried Armored Core, and I played less of it than I played of Final Fantasy 16, which I did find out 16. I played 10 hours really? Of it, Final Fantasy 16. But I think I only played maybe 2 hours of Armored Core, and I was just like, ooh, I did not. It was not for me at all. But Lies of P, I'm loving. I love it so much. Yeah, so good.
That's all
so
right. Good. Well, I have updated the scores. So how this works is, okay, so it's the top four out of our five. So your bottom game would get dropped. So for example, Steve, you will not have to take a zero for Hollow Knight because that will just get dropped. And Dean, in your case, you will drop Lords of the Fallen, which only scored a 73.
That makes sense.
And how this works is any game over a 70 gets 1 point. So if you scored an 88, you'll get 18 points. Anything above a 90, so a 91, a 92, is worth 2 points. So, for example, a 91 would get you 22 points instead of 21. And then if you have a game that scores below a 70, you actually lose points. And incredibly, we actually didn't choose a single game that scored below a 70. So I take that as a win because in my personal fantasy draft with some of my friends, there were a lot of negative scores. So,
how many of them chose the day before? I'm just curious.
Thank goodness, nobody. I kind of regret not buying it just for preservation's sake because that is the fastest that's disappeared. That's wild. What a story. That's a story for next week. But here we go. So, with the scoring in mind. In fourth place, we have our host himself, Dean Daly. Dean, you had a total score of 55, a very respectable score considering that it's only four games. That's still a really good score. How do you feel?
Honestly, if no one can see this, I mean, outside of you three, but I named myself Fantasy Draft Loser for this podcast because I knew I was going to lose. There was one point where I was like, I should have picked Starfield when I had the chance, but I don't even then was like, eh, I shouldn't have done it. I don't know. Maybe next year I'll just have to do better. I'll warm up next year.
Yeah, I won't pick three
Soulsborne games.
You know what? What I appreciate about your strategy, Dean, is you picked games that you want to play, and that was my strategy too. I think I just lucked out in some ways that we'll get to in terms of a few of my picks, but I like your strategy. I think choose things you're passionate about. So I respect.
Thank you.
It.
Thank you.
All right, in third place, we have Steve. Steve, you had a total of 63. Can you talk us through a little bit about that score?
Yeah, I mean, I wholeheartedly regret letting you get two of your picks, Chris, because I should have jumped on one specific one. I should have had the foresight, but I didn't. I'm pretty happy with my picks overall. I mean, Marvel Spider-Man 2 was a good one for me. Starfield was also a good one. Personally, I think where it all fell apart was choosing Forza Motorsport, where historically those games always kind of score very high. I'm actually surprised that out of this one was 84, which is, I'd have to go back, but it seems low to me, especially for a game that is just so high quality. But yeah, otherwise, there wasn't really much I could do. I put a lot of stock into Hollow Knight, obviously, which we already talked about. But otherwise, I'm happy with my choices. But yeah, this was such a good year that, yeah, like we're going to go over, like so many games just scored upwards of like high 80s, high 90s, that it's kind of hard to kind of pick and choose which ones were. Everything's so marginal. There's such a marginal difference that, it was a tough year for sure.
The fact that you came in third and your lowest scoring game was an 84 speaks volumes.
That's what I mean, right? Yeah.
His lowest scoring game was a 0. It just didn't count. I just want to remind people of that.
Was non-existent. Exactly. Yeah.
In second place, Brad. Brad had a total score of 82. So for context,
dang, Brad.
Dean had 55, Steve had 63, Brad had 82. It's a huge year. So Brad, we didn't go through your games really quickly, just to contextualize. You took Resident Evil 4, Final Fantasy 16, Sea of Stars, Cocoon, and Super Mario Bros. Wonder. Cocoon scored an 87. And that's the game that didn't count towards your score. So, oh Brad, how do you feel?
And that won Best Debut Indie Game at the Game Awards.
It did, yeah.
And that's the other two scored like 90s from that designer. So that's like low for him. Yeah, I'm happy with this list. To be honest, I thought Final Fantasy 16 would be a little higher and Sea of Stars would be a little lower going into this year. I picked Sea of Stars kind of as an early indie pick. And because like Dean did, I picked something that I knew I wanted, but just knowing it's from the Final Fantasy 14 team, I thought 16 would do a little better. I mean, going into it, now that I've played it, I understand there are problems with it. I agree with an 88. That seems reasonable to me, but at the time, that was kind of my thought process. It's like, oh, you got the Devil May Cry combat designer, you got the FF14 narrative team. It's like, that's a no-brainer peanut butter and jelly sandwich combination right there. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, Mario Bros. Wonder, I picked it at the time purely as a strategic move, and then I ended up playing it and loving it, so I'm happy that I went with that. Resident Evil 4 was just the safe pick. I had a feeling that would do really well. I really liked it. Overall, I'm happy with those picks. Like Steve said, I'm upset that you got Tears of the Kingdom and Baldur's Gate 3, and then Alan Wake 2 as well.
Boom, this guy!
You know, what are we going to do? So.
As he alluded to, yes, I did come in first place. I had a score of 92. And you know what? I lucked out in a lot of ways. I picked games that I was excited about. And I, to be fair as well, I got Tears of the Kingdom because I did get to go first. So I locked that one down. Otherwise, anybody probably would have taken that as their first pick. And that did get a 96. Where it gets a little bit more interesting is, yes, I took Baldur's Gate 3. And I don't think anybody probably predicted that would get a 96. I thought it was probably in the 90s, but not a 96. That is crazy how high it scored.
Tied with Zelda for the highest rated game tied of the with year, Zelda. Which is crazy.
And you know what? Like, again, these are just the games I really wanted to play. Like, Alan Wake is one of those games, when they announced that it was getting a sequel years ago, it was kind of mind-blowing. I'm like, no way anybody is following up Alan Wake. What a niche game that was. And I loved the first game, loved the second game. Anything Remedy puts out at this point is probably going on my game of the year list. And then finally, I had Like a Dragon Gaiden, the man who erased his name, only scored a 79. What we didn't know at the time is that game was developed in just 6 months, which is pretty insane. Look out for Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth next year. That's the mainline game that's going back to being a turn-based RPG. I'm really excited for that one. And Replaced was my final one. That would have gotten a zero because it did not release. Maybe next year. Maybe. We'll have to wait and see. But that rounds up our fantasy draft for the year. So, We will come up with a belt or something that we can give out for the inaugural version of this, and next year we can hand it off. But thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to do this. This is something that I've wanted to do for a really long time, and it's so much fun to just kind of take a look at the year through the lens of scores. And of course, scores aren't everything. Don't pay too much attention to critic scores and all of that stuff. But it's a cool way for us to celebrate the games we're excited about as well, and kind of look at industry trends and a whole bunch of other things. So thank you guys for amusing me.
I love this guy. He's like, oh, we should get a belt to give to me.
In context, yeah, that is a little weird, but thank you for pointing that out, Dean.
No worries.
We should get a belt and a podium, maybe, and a bottle of champagne. I don't know. You guys have fun with it.
All right, guys. So our podcast has gone over an hour. We do have one more segment, but we'll do it very, very quickly because everyone knows about this product, or a lot of people should know about this product by now. But our next segment is Game Treat or Game Trash. However, today it will be Tech Treat or Tech Trash because it's not specifically a game. It is a device, and that device today is the PlayStation Portal. And how Tech Treat or Tech Trash works is if you think it is a thumbs up, it is a tech treat. If you think it is a thumbs down, it is trash. Let's start with Steve. PlayStation Portal, trash or treat?
Yo, this is a treat. This is a treat, baby. I really like this. I don't know. Are we doing like any like high level thoughts on it? Or
we don't have to. We normally would. We're out of running out of time though. So
then two thumbs up for me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Brad.
We should quantify quickly that Steve has it and Dean has it. I gave him my review unit, so they've actually significantly used one. I would imagine Chris hasn't, and I haven't either. So I'm only going off purely from what I've seen and heard, and just like, it would be a thumbs down for me. I just think it's overpriced and lacking in too many features. So thumbs down for me.
Chris, trash or treat?
Thumbs down. Steam Deck for life, baby. Let's go. You can do the exact same thing. Just get a Steam Deck and use it as your PlayStation Portal.
And screw you too. Treat for me. As Brad said, Steve and I both have it. I love it. I've been playing Lords of the Fallen on it more than I play it on my actual console now. My review of that should be coming up soon. It's done. I'm just waiting for it to be edited. And yeah. All right. That's it. Thanks everyone for listening to the Syrup Cast. You can find me on Threads and Instagram at MyDailyDuos, and of course, on Mobile Syrup. Brad, where can people find you, and what have you been working on, or do you want to highlight?
I'm on Twitter, X, Brad Shankar, BradShankar, obviously Mobile Syrup as well. In terms of stuff I've been working on, today, Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown preview just went up. I played it a little bit at Summer Game Fest, but I played a few hours of it as well. Game's really good. It's the first game in 2024 I'd say I'm really excited for, because it comes out in a month now, January 15th. And I know Steve played that as well, so you can plug your own coverage for that as well. And then I went to Day of the Devs when I was in Los Angeles, which is like an indie game showcase. So I got to check out a bunch of games there. So I'm probably just going to do like a short roundup of like, here are five indie games I checked out. Really cool stuff with those. And then, yeah, just the usual end of year content. We'll do like Mobile Syrup's top games of the year. I'll round up Canadian games of the year. And then looking ahead for Canadian games in 2024. So some cool stuff still.
Steve, how about you? Where can people find you? And anything you want to shout out?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, thank you guys for inviting me back on the show. This was a ton of fun. I always loved gabbing about games with you guys. To keep up with me, I make it really easy. I'm found on all platforms at SVigvari. Recent stuff I put out, I had an interview with streamer Valkyrie. She has a cameo in an upcoming Apple TV Plus movie called The Family Plan. And basically, I talked to her, sat down with her, and just kind of talked about how streaming and gaming is kind of represented in pop culture and films and television. So it was a really interesting conversation. I also have a feature going up on Mobile Syrup about the ROG Ally. I've been using that for the past few weeks, almost a month now, and I'm really digging that. So yeah, that should be up at some point, whenever it gets edited and published. But other than that, yeah, you can keep up with me on all social media. Brad alluded to, I also put up a video about Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown on my Instagram and TikTok. And then, yeah, I have a couple podcasts, a gaming podcast and Creature Cast, a weekly video game podcast out there. So, yeah, I'm always keeping busy out there.
Awesome. Good to know. And no one will ever find Chris Brown anywhere, so don't bother looking. If you look for Chris Brown, you will find the singer slash rapper.
Yes, absolutely, except that you will see a lot more of me on our YouTube channel this year. So be sure to check that out. We are Mobile Syrup on YouTube. We will be doing a whole bunch of video content this year. We're really expanding that space. Dean, I'm excited to do some stuff with you. We'll be doing more gaming content, more tech content. Make sure to check that out over the course of 2024.
And as always, you can find all of our content on mobilesyrup.com and follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at mobilesyrup. Thank you. Bye.